Care Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, what's going on in the Middle East? Israel's war cabinet has met to discuss its response to Iran's unprecedented drone and missile attack. Officials didn't make public whether a decision had been reached. Israel's allies have strongly condemned Iran's actions, but urged Benjamin Netanyahu's government to show restraint, while Iran has signalled it considers the matter closed, with the Israeli military's chief of staff saying the attack would not go unanswered. On the line is Professor John O'Brennan, Jean Monnet Professor of European Integration and Director of the Maynooth Centre for European and Eurasian Studies at Maynooth University. John, welcome back to the programme. First of all, just take us through what happened over the last few days, because it has sparked international concern, I suppose you could say, that this is going to lead to an escalation and an outbreak of a region-wide war in the Middle East.
Well, on Saturday, Owen, Iran launched more than 300 different missiles and drones at Israel. And it did so, it said, in retaliation for the killing of seven senior generals from the Iranian Republican Guard regime on the 1st of April. You may remember that on that date, Israel bombed the consulate of Iran in Damascus. And the reason that was so important was that even countries that dislike each other enormously don't generally go after the embassies of their adversaries, because these are considered to be sovereign soil. So the Iranians, I suppose, as much for public consumption as anything else, felt that they had to launch a retaliation that was of scale. And that's what they did on Saturday. But the other reason it was significant was that this was the first time that Iran had launched a direct assault on Israel. It has done so many times in the past through its proxies like Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, and more recently the Houthi group from Yemen. But this was the first direct attack on Israel by Iran. And I think it was that really that sent the world spinning on Saturday night. There were all kinds of speculations that this would lead to escalation. Now, I think that's unlikely, because the Iranians clearly signaled what they were going to do. 3 days beforehand, they virtually told all of the states, the neighboring states in the region, that they were going to respond in this fashion. So everybody knew, Israel knew, the United States knew, and they also did it, I think, in the full knowledge that because Israel has the Iron Dome and because it has the best air defense system in the world, that very few, if any, of these missiles were likely to actually get through and cause damage. So in my view, what they were doing was simply performative. They had to be seen to respond, and that's what they did.
Could that backfire, though, John? Because I stayed up virtually all night on Saturday watching Sky News and CNN, and it was described as, well, you don't want to see civilians being killed in Israel, and, you know, regardless of where it is, but it was seen as a bit of a failure by Iran, and in fairness, the United States and the UK and other allies weighed in to help Israel. But while you say Iran's attack there was largely performative, could that now have backlash if Israel do decide to retaliate again?
I think that's the key question at this point. President Biden said in his communication to Prime Minister Netanyahu over the weekend, look, you've got your win. The Iranians absolutely failed to land a blow on you. Walk away. This is the time to walk away from this. But the impression I have over the last 24 hours is that an Israeli government that by any measure, is very extreme, and that hasn't listened very much to the White House over the last 6 or 7 months, that it is minded to take further steps against Iran. There's a lot of speculation about what these might involve. It could be a huge cyber attack that would try to paralyze most of the utilities of Iran, most of the government functions and so on, or it could come in the form of a direct military attack. We simply don't know. And I think that's why there is still a lot of nervousness and fear about what form further escalation might take.
Do you think any part of this, John, was to distract Israel from what's going on in Gaza? You mentioned that Hamas are kind of a proxy of Iran and they are an ally of Iran. Israel's attention would have been over the weekend on what Iran was doing. Any idea there as to whether or not that was a distraction tactic?
Well, there is a school of thought that says that Netanyahu deliberately planned the attack on the Iranian consulate on the 1st of April with the intention of provoking a large-scale response of the kind that we saw on Saturday by Iran. In other words, it was a very deliberate provocation by an Israeli government that is under extreme pressure, both internally within Israel, where it's deeply unpopular, and especially Netanyahu himself, and globally, because with 33,000 Palestinian people dead, three quarters of them women and children, Israel's reputation globally has never been as much on the floor as it is. So I think there's quite convincing evidence that Netanyahu planned that attack on the 1st of April, knowing that he could suck the Iranian leadership into a provocation of this kind. Now, what happens subsequently? Well, we have to factor in human nature. And nothing would surprise me, frankly, Owen, about what might come out of Netanyahu's government, a government that is desperate to stay in power, that has made so many mistakes in recent months. And you just simply cannot factor in what they might do in these kind of circumstances. I think it's incredibly unpredictable. The only thing I would say that kind of mitigates the worst is that if you look at the position of virtually all of the governments in the region, none of them want war. So there were previous cycles of Middle East conflict in the 1970s, for example, and in the 1960s, and they managed to suck in most of the states in the region. That's the fear, I think, here, that that's what would happen if the Israelis and Iranians escalate further. But if you look at the position of the Saudis, which had been on the point of making peace with Israel historically before the attacks of the 7th of October, if you look at Qatar and other states, they have all been doing whatever they could to de-escalate things over the last 6 months. So I think that's an important factor potentially when we look at the potential for escalation. There are forces that are trying to tamper things down as much as possible as well.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak called on all sides to show restraint in the Parliament yesterday, and he added that he would speak to Benjamin Netanyahu to express solidarity and to discuss how to prevent further escalation, and Joe Biden doing the same, telling Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government not to retaliate and to walk away. We'll have to wait and see if that happens. Before I let you go, John, just closer to home, there's an event taking place in Maynooth University you want to tell us about?
Thanks, Owen. Yes, the European Parliament elections are fast approaching, and we have a very, very competitive election in our constituency here in Midlands Northwest. I think we have at least 13 candidates now who put their names forward. So we're going to have 7 or 8 of them at Maynooth University this afternoon. They will be debating with each other from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock at the Maynooth University Students' Union on the north campus of the university. So if anybody is interested in coming along, listening to what the candidates have to say and asking questions of them, they're more than welcome to attend. It's at 4 o'clock at the Maynooth Students' Union.
Good stuff. Listen, thanks for that, Professor John O'Brien, Jean Monnet Professor of European Integration and Director of the Maynooth Centre for European and Eurasian Studies at Maynooth University. Good morning to you, and a reminder that debate taking place at 4 o'clock today at Maynooth University. Let's go to the Naas Municipal District then, and Labour Councillor Anne Breen is on the line. Anne, thanks for joining us. You want to Kildare County Council to install what you say is a much needed age-friendly parking space in Poplar Square beside the current disability bays. Are they going to do that?
Yeah, good morning, Owen. Good morning to your listeners. Poplar Square was a very, very easy place to park before they took away all the parking spaces. And I've been asked, could I ask the council, which I did, to put an age-friendly. All I'm looking is one age-friendly parking bed there. All you have to do is take away a planter and put it in beside the disabled parking bay. Now, we have one at the top of the town, and I would suggest it would be good to have one in Poplar Square for people with who are age-friendly and who want to go in and park. Maybe somebody who has had a hip replacement, a knee replacement, or people with hidden disabilities. So this is what I want. One parking bay.
Are they going to do it, Anne?
No, I think it should be taken into consideration when the parking bylaws come in. And they haven't said, I don't think they really want to do it, but I'm going to pursue this for people who've asked me about this particular area. So that's what my view is.
Okay, the next issue then, Anne, and this is not a reflection on you, but to be honest with you, I'm fed up talking about Piper's Hill and the traffic around Piper's Hill. I know councillors are, parents are, teachers are, students are, residents out there are as well. What's going on here? Because traffic in the mornings and the evenings is just a joke and has been for years.
Yeah, it has been, and I've been highlighting this, and so has my colleagues. And we're getting nowhere. But there has been some work done, and I welcome that. They have pedestrian crossings and improvements. But what needs to be done here is a second exit. People to go in to Piper's Hill, to go to the school, to go into all the houses, hundreds of houses up there. And they've only one way in and one way out. So hopefully there will be a second entrance. But I think KWETB have to get involved with this as well, with the developer and the council.
Right, we'll stay in Naas then. You wanted the council to restore the parking facility loading bay on the Dublin Road and the public parklet be removed. As you say, it's not being used by the public. Where exactly is this parklet?
Now, I disagree with the council, the report that I got. The parklet was first installed on North Main Street across the road from the credit union. Now, that's the narrowest part of the town. That parklet cost $30,500, excluding VAT. And then it cost $17,500 to remove this parklet to the Dublin Road into a loading bay. Now, I do see that the children from the schools use it, and I welcome that because they use that to eat their lunch. But I've been told that most of the traders in that area wanted that loading bay and wanted to park it in there.
Where is it, Anne? I'm trying to think. Where exactly is it?
It's down beside Urban Kitchen.
All right, OK.
Now, it's like an eyesore. I walk up and down the town every day. I walk up to the council. I walk back again. I have never seen other than school children. And I welcome them that they use that for their lunch, eating their lunch. But there's a loading bay there, and sometimes you've got lorries who are double parked, and that causes a problem on the main street in there, from the Dublin Road up.
Are the council going to remove it, or are they saying, no, it's grand, leave it where it is?
No, the traders want it, but I've been talking to traders, and a lot of them don't want it. The traders in the town centre say they want it, but I was talking to one trader in there, and he said he wasn't even notified.
All right. OK, finally then, Anne, did you get an update on parking for the new shopping centre in Naas? What's happening there?
Yeah, I welcome that the parking, 250 spaces, planning permission, and I welcome that because I think the shopping centre is needed. And now that the front of it has been resolved, and I would like to congratulate the council on the entrance of the main street at the bank. And I welcome that it's going to go ahead, 250 spaces, and that will be welcome for the town.
Yeah, we spoke to Ger Roach on the programme the other day, and the opening of Naas Shopping Centre has been kicked out a little bit to July. But if we get an update on that, we will bring it to listeners. We'll leave it there for the moment. Labour Councillor Anne Breen with those local issues brought forward to Kildare County Council. Thanks for that, Anne, and good morning.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Few more messages that have come in to us. Could you please inform listeners that it's Poplar Square, not Popular Square? The name came from the row of poplar trees there long ago, says Elaine. That's right, Elaine. Yeah, it's spelled P-O-P-L-A-R. So it's not a square that is very popular, but it's Poplar Square. Thanks, Elaine. Another one from Tom in Newbridge says, good morning, Owen. Just something I've witnessed over the past few days. I think the council should take a look at the road from the railway station in Newbridge. There was a tailback from the light at Sarsfields past Newbridge Town Football Club up to the top of the bridge. So any car coming over the bridge won't see them until the last second and could cause an accident. So that comes in from Tom in Newbridge. And if any of the Newbridge councillors there are listening, you might follow up on that. Dermot Good of TotalHealthCover.ie joins me now because about 130,000 VHI members will be forced to change their healthcare cover, with the insurer set to axe some of its most popular plans next month. Welcome to the programme, Dermot. Is this a surprise, and is it going to impact maybe those most vulnerable, those older customers who are on these plans?
Yeah, good morning, Owen. Yeah, it's, we know that VHI have been, I suppose, reviewing all of their plans, and they have over the last 18 months. They've retired a lot of the older schemes. I suppose we weren't expecting right now that they were going to make these changes so soon after their price increase that they brought in March. But it does mean that nearly 150,000 of their customers are going to find that the plan that they're on will no longer be available. And on these are plans that some of them go back at least 30 years. So people will remember the old Plan B and Plan B options. The latter is now called Health Plus Extra. So they're retiring four of those schemes. So I suppose in a nutshell, it means that, and by the way, these are predominantly the older members who are on these plans, because these plans give you full cover for orthopaedics and ophthalmics and things like that. But they are very expensive. But it does mean that those members now will have no option but to shop around from their next renewal. I suppose on a positive note, VHI will have alternative plans that they're going to offer them, which will give very similar cover. And of the four plans, I mean, three of the alternatives are in around the same pricing. I would be concerned, Owen, for the people on the Health Plus Extra scheme. That plan last year was 2,950. It went up to 3,400 on the 1st of March this year, which is like a 15% increase. But the plan that I think VHI are going to offer those members, which is called Advanced Care Extra Day-to-Day, is 3,540. So that means for those people who want to stay with VHI and keep a like-for-like plan, you know, their year-on-year increase, it could be closer to 20%. So I suppose I just think right now, given, you know, that these members will have no option but to shop around, I think there's never been a better time now to look across. You know, before you take the first option the VHI offer, look across the entire market. I mean, there are plans there on the market, particularly with Laya Healthcare at the moment, where there are savings, depending on the plan, but there are savings upwards of maybe €1,000 per adult. And I just think that's too big a saving to be ignored.
Yeah, and we already have some messages coming in from listeners, Dermot, just asking when this is going to come into effect and if we're kind of getting enough of a warning or enough notice. But apparently, the plans will no longer be available to new members or renewals from the 1st of May. So that's tomorrow week.
Exactly.
Tomorrow, two weeks, sorry.
Exactly. And what's happened here now, Owen, to be fair to VHI or all the insurance companies, so they're phasing this in from renewal date. So if I've already renewed in January or February or March, I will not be impacted by these changes until this time next year. So it's not like on the 1st of May, everybody loses the plan. So it'll come in from renewal. So people will have time. VHI will write to people 4 to 5 weeks prior to the renewal date. People will get that by email or by post, and they will outline the alternatives. And I would say to anybody right now, look, you know, the good news is if you want to stay with VHI and if you want to pay those high premiums, then there will be alternatives available from VHI. But, you know, my message to everybody on, and you've heard me say this over and over, look, why not take the opportunity now, given that your plan is no longer going to be available, to shop around? And I would say, like, I know right now there are some people listening to this who may be older members, they're using their cover, they've, you know, maybe very serious underlying conditions, and they're very afraid of making any change whatsoever. You know, all you need to do is just simply, for example, you phone up Laya Healthcare or Irish Life Health for that matter, but I would start with Laya, and you simply say, look, I have VHI Health Plus Extra. What's the closest equivalent plan that you have that's similar or identical, that's less expensive? And just sit back and see what they recommend. And whatever plan they offer you, and they have some, you know, there's a load of new plans, Momentum, Power, Simplicity, there's a whole range of new plans there. And then whatever plan they suggest, just simply get them to explain exactly how it compares to your VHI scheme, what stays the same, what you're losing, what you're gaining. And that's how you make an informed decision, and tell them everything that's important to you, every surgery you've had, every surgery that's maybe pending, and then you'll know exactly where you stand. And have the same discussion with VHI. I mean, I would urge everybody, don't just roll over onto the plan that VHI offers you. There may also be differences with those plans. So, you know, even if you want to stay with VHI, you should still have the exact same discussion with them. Mm. How does the new plan you're offering compare? What am I losing? What am I gaining? And it's really important. And for any of your older listeners on, if they're worried about doing this, I would suggest, look, you know, a son, a daughter, a neighbour, a trusted friend, somebody who's maybe very comfortable with the jargon that the insurance companies use, or engaging with them, and get them to help you do the review. Or there's loads of brokers countrywide who will do this for you. But the key thing is not to do nothing, because, you know, even the alternatives that VHI are offering are very, very expensive as well. So I just think if there's potentially €1,000 worth of savings there, and given that your plan is going to be retired, you know, now's the time to shop around to see what might be there that could bag some of those savings for you.
It can be very daunting, as you say, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, Dermot, because since this news emerged yesterday, ourselves in here, Hannah, Emma, Martin, myself, have all been taking phone calls from listeners, mostly older, who have been signed up to these plans for years and years and years, and now they're saying, what happens? What will I do? I don't know how to renew. I don't know how to shop around, because they've been on these plans and they've been letting them auto-renew for the last number of years. But if you have a family member or a broker that is there that can give you a hand, then get in touch with them. Before I let you go, Dermot, something that has also cropped up, and I think we spoke to you about this previously, is that insurance premiums are going up. The prices around the market are going up, and the same can be said for house insurance, for car insurance, and also health insurance. Why is that? Why are we seeing the prices go up?
Yeah, there's a number of reasons going for this. I mean, it's mainly driven by claims. Claims are literally soaring. We saw VHI just published their annual report for last year. They made a significant loss, which is the first loss, I think, in a number of years. We saw the Health Insurance Authority report that said that claims are up over 15%. So not surprisingly, people are now going back into hospital to get everything done that they had postponed. And consumers are missing two things here. First of all, they're hearing these average figures that the insurance companies put out. Be very careful. In some cases, your plan could be going up by double the average. So forget about the average figure. You need to look at what your plan, what the rate is on your specific scheme. The second thing that people are missing is that they hear the latest price increases, like VHI on the 1st of March, Laya on the 1st of April, but they forget that those two insurance companies and Irish Life Health went up a number of times in 2023. So when you look at the cumulative impact, like those people, we mentioned the old B options, Health Plus Extra, a retired couple on that plan will have to find €900 extra. So the plan was 2,950, is now 3,400, just to renew on that plan. And if they automatically go on the plan that VHI are going to offer them, because that Health Plus Extra is being retired, like Shane, their bill is going to go up by 20%, like by 550 each. So like the increases are quite staggering. And I would say to all of your listeners now, you cannot renew on your plan automatically without shopping around. The good news is they are launching new plans all the time. There's new deals being launched, particularly for the corporate sector. So on the message is, if you shop around, you'll find out those deals. If you don't shop around, you're going to miss it. And when I say shop around, I mean you engage directly with the insurance company. Challenge them to find you a similar plan to what you have that fits your budget. And don't be afraid to tell them the budget, because that focuses the mind. That means they have to work within those figures. You may be very shocked to see what savings you can get.
Dermot Good of TotalHealthCover.ie, great to talk to you as always, and thanks for joining us. Around 130,000 VHI members will be forced to change their healthcare cover, with the insurer axing some of its most popular plans from next month. And again, to remind you, those plans are Health Plus Extra, Health Plus Access, Health Plus Excess and Health Access. So if you're on any of those four plans, they will no longer be available to new members or renewals from the 1st of May. But if you have renewed already, so if you renewed back in January or February, it won't run out until that same time next year, as Dermot has outlined.